Hey, this is Reverend Lindsay again, and thanks for joining me for part two of our Stay at Home Worship podcast for my meditation on the scriptures for November 8th, 2020, my meditation entitled Waiting for Results, based on our readings from Matthew 25, 1 through 13, and Amos 5, 18 through 24. So, welcome to another episode of Really, Jesus? With a dash of Amos, dude, seriously? On the side. But to begin with the parable of the bridesmaids, it's harsh. What's the takeaway? Store up treasures on earth? I got mine, too bad about you. All mean girls go to heaven? Really, Jesus? It's hard to hear these stories out of context, out of their biblical context and the historical context of their writing. So remember that when Jesus tells the story, he is running out of time. He's already made that insta-worthy entry into Jerusalem. The Passover is near, and so are betrayal and death. The disciples still don't understand, but Jesus does. He's trying to prepare them for what's to come and for what will come after. But once they got it, Jesus' first followers expected him to make his triumphant return, that second coming, in their lifetimes. People who came after, the ones Matthew was written for, they were still waiting. They'd begun to question. Some were losing heart. So Jesus' words speaks to the problem of what to do in the meantime. We, the church, we affirm that Jesus will come again. But what do we do in the meantime, in the interim time, if you will? What strikes me about this story is not how different the so-called wise and foolish bridesmaids are, but how alike. All are invited, all show up, all bring their oil lamps, they all get tired of the long wait, and all of them fall asleep. And then things get sticky. The bridegroom is approaching and the oil is running low and those well-prepared bridesmaids refuse to share. And after those silly girls who didn't plan ahead get back from their trip to the all-night oil store, they find the door to the wedding hall locked against them. They knock, but the bridegroom shouts, "I don't even know you." Really, Jesus? The rotten thing is, this story does contain judgment. And we don't like that. I don't like when people are judged, or I say I don't. But here it seems especially unfair. We hate to think of people barred from the feast because, what, they didn't bring enough material goods? Didn't have the wherewithal to stockpile cheap oil from Walmart, so they had to run to the corner bodega at the last minute despite the inflated prices, and still got punished? Jesus basically tells two kinds of parables, those that end with a shocking crash of judgment, and those that end with an equally shocking note of grace. Most of us, by and large, prefer the gracie ones. But much as we hate to acknowledge it, there is judgment in the Bible. So is there a word of hope in what strikes us as judgmental, judgy judgment here? Remember how similar those bridesmaids are. All are invited. All are at least partially prepared. All are eager for the groom to come. All get tired and start to snooze. Hard to tell them apart up to that point, which serves to remind us you can't always tell the wise from the foolish, the wheat from the weeds. We can't tell. If there is judgment to be meted out, it's not up to us to do it. And this is a parable, a story. It may sound dire, damned for a little lack of oil, but it was told to encourage people, not condemn them. It was told to and for believers, faithful followers, not whoever the fire and brimstone crowd thinks are damned no matter what. It's told to us to say, I know the wait is much longer than you expected. I know you get tired, but take heart, stay prepared. The groom will come. My guess is most of us don't often think about the second coming. Nearly two millennia after Jesus' earthly life, it can seem like a fairy tale. And as a colleague of mine said, remember the bumper sticker, Jesus is coming, look busy? Well, staying busy can get tiring after 2,000 years. And anyway, we are already busy living our lives in the here and now, already busy preparing and waiting for things that feel more urgent. Plus, as Presbyterian Charles Wiley has noted, we fear association with those Christians for whom the second coming is the most prominent aspect of their faith. We've heard descriptions of the second coming in books of the horror of being left behind and have been at a loss as how to deal with the subject. But he adds, in distancing ourselves from the excesses of this collection of beliefs, we can miss the vital importance of affirming Christ's return. This wedding story asks us to spare thought for it, for that day when, as the Apostles' Creed affirms, Christ shall come to judge the living and the dead. But also, as the book of Revelation describes Christ's coming, and I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, see, the home of God is among mortals. God will dwell with them. They will be God's peoples, and God will be with them and will wipe away every tear from their eyes. Death will be no more. Mourning and crying and pain will be no more. For the first things have passed away. And the one who was seated on the throne said, see, I am making all things new. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. Yes, granted, we are probably not going to wait for the second coming with the same intensity as we wait, as I write on Friday, for the presidential election results. And that's probably good. And those who long for the second coming with desperation usually do so because they are experiencing unendurable suffering in this life. And I pray that is none of you. But we shouldn't lose sight of it, and we should prepare. Though it's hard to prepare for something that we have a hard time imagining, maybe, though it's no excuse, but maybe that's why our government was so woefully unprepared to deal with this coronavirus pandemic. Yet once we knew about it, individuals did our best to prepare, I guess, with our stocking up, or should I say hoarding of toilet paper and bleach and fusilli. But in truth, who among us could have been prepared emotionally, psychologically, spiritually, for months of isolation and deprivation and fear? How could we have been prepared for over 235,000 deaths nationally and nearly 1.25 million deaths globally? And while I'm at it, how could anyone, Democrat or Republican, have been prepared for the reality of the Trump administration, which to my mind has been much wilder, shall I say, than anything found in Revelation. And it has made me pray more than once, come, Lord Jesus. But the thing is, we as Christians have to prepare for the bridegroom's arrival. But even more, we have to prepare for the wait. And as we know from waiting for election results, waiting for this pandemic to end, waiting for medical test results, waiting stinks. So again, what do we do in the meantime? Amos says, don't think you can make God happy with your elaborate worship services when the fact is you neglect the poor and the suffering and lie around drinking martinis and thinking only of yourselves. That's actually a paraphrase of an earlier verse. I don't want your fancy displays of religiosity. I want care for the poor and sick. An end to oppression, a legal system that serves everyone equally. I want healthy relationships, thriving communities. What do I want, God cries? Justice. When do I want it? Now. And this odd little parable that Jesus tells calls us to think about what sustains us while we wait and work for justice. What keeps us well-oiled and functioning? What keeps us ready to deal with setback and delay? I hope and pray that your faith sustains you. But I know faith is also something we need to work at, to replenish. Yes, it is a gift from God. But if I can use a silly example, I always cringe when I get a houseplant as a gift because it's all very nice, but I know I'm going to have to take care of it, nurture it, water it, see that it gets enough sunlight, maybe even repot it. And I wasn't born with a green thumb. It doesn't come naturally for me. Faith doesn't always come naturally. We need to find what feeds us. What replenishes our lamps when they run dry? So though I'm tempted to judge those prissy, so-called wise bridesmaids who didn't have the decency to share, I wonder, could they share? We can offer a helping hand. We can share our material goods and our wisdom, but we can't live other people's lives for them. We can prepare with each other, but not for each other. What was foolish, maybe, about some of the bridesmaids was that they waited till they needed faith before they went looking for it. Oh, they had a little, but their reserves weren't deep. When the crisis came, the long night of waiting, the sputtering lamp, it was too late. So they panicked, and when they couldn't get anyone to give them what they lacked, they ran off on a frantic search. Maybe they would have been wiser to stay put there in the dark, scary as it was, to huddle closer to their light-bearing friends, trusting that the groom would come, bearing enough oil, enough light, enough faith for them all. Now, whether or not those foolish ones were actually barred from the party, we can't say for sure. I like to imagine that eventually the door was open to them and the groom said, y'all messed up, but I give you points for trying. Come on in. We are each wise at times, and each foolish at times. Sometimes we're as prepared as an Eagle Scout. Sometimes we're just about empty. We all get tired. Maybe so tired that the whole faith thing seems like a pipe dream. We have to decide what we're waiting for and whether it's worth the wait. And frankly, if it's a 3D high def rapture when some of us will be whisked up to heaven and most of us, probably me included, will face the tortures of the damned below, or even a kindler, gentler day of the Lord, when everyone feasts on tofu burgers and sings kumbaya. Well, that's not what keeps me going. But if it's Christ we wait for, once and for all in the future and here and now in our lives, if it's the fulfillment of all our prayers and all our longing, if it's God's rule on earth just as just and merciful as it is in heaven, I hope your answer is yes. It's worth the wait. Christ's goodness and mercy, God's peace and justice, the Spirit blowing where she will until all people are lifted up. That must be worth it. Every last ounce of oil, every fearful hour, every endless night. The thing is, Jesus may seem delayed, but he is at work in the world, at work in us, in each of you. And he is waiting for us as eagerly as we wait for him, probably more eagerly. Really, Jesus? Really. Thanks be to God. Amen.